you know, let's figure out how to recognize our similarities, and that as a community we need to be working together and not dividing, because it's a whole lot easier to pick us apart if we're squabbling amongst each other, as opposed to, you know, to recognizing the similarities, and that these impacts to one segment of our community are eventually going to come around and impact us too. So we need to have each other's backs.
Welcome to the Woman Angler and Adventurer Podcast, inspiring real women with a passion for fishing and the outdoors to go get their adventure on. Now, here's your host, Master Captain Angie Scott.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to another important episode of the Woman Angler and Adventurer Podcast. This week, I welcome Vice President of Government Affairs for the American Sport Fishing Association, Mike Leonard. Mike shares with us some important issues that we should be aware of that affect the sport we love so much, and some ways you can get involved to help. Before we get into it, I wanted to share some sad news. On March 27th, we lost a light in the fishing world, Beverly Yamamoto, wife of Gary Yamamoto. Though I never had the opportunity to meet her in person, we connected via social media, and she's been a great supporter of the Woman Angler and Adventurer Podcast, the Lady Bass Anglers Association, and our friends over at iBass 360. I wish I could have had a chance to have her as a guest on the show, but condolences go out to the Yamamoto family, friends, and the fishing community as we mourn this loss. I'll share a link to her obituary in the show notes for this episode if you'd like to read more or to share your condolences. In other news, we are getting ready to leave our home in Florida this week and head back up to Nashville, Tennessee. I'm excited to get back to the Crestliner MX-19 and get back out on the water to do some fun spring fishing on Percy Priest Lake. We've got a lot to do over the next several months as we're kind of dialing in our lifestyle and goals for the future. And I'll continue to provide updates on the show and on social media as things progress. All right, without further delay, let's get into this important conversation with Mike Leonard from the ASA. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Woman Angler and Adventurer Podcast. This week, I have a special guest with us, Mike Leonard, Vice President of Government Affairs at the American Sport Fishing Association, a.k.a. the ASA. Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Angie, thanks for having me on. Excited to chat with you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So I thought it would be good. You know, I got to see you speak here not too long ago at the National Professional Anglers Association conference on some issues and things like that. And I thought it would be a good idea to take some time to kind of, first of all, just kind of introduce yourself and what the ASA does, but also to talk about some of those issues that people listening to the show, even if, you know, just a casual angler or someone who likes to hunt, some of the issues that they should really be aware of, and how we can all band together and help. So if you wouldn't mind, just to kick off, give listeners a little background on yourself and also the American Sport Fishing Association.
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, thanks for the opportunity. We're of all the different organizations running around there doing fisheries policy conservation work, we're maybe not the most popular or well known, but I'd like to think we're, you know, fairly influential, more of a behind the scenes type of organization, at least amongst your average angler audience. American Sport Fishing Association is the trade association for the recreational fishing industry. We've been around for a little over 90 years. So most of our members are, you know, the brands that most anglers are well familiar with, of, you know, Shimano and Daiwa and Rapala. More on the manufacturing side, we've got some retailers, wholesalers, sales reps, but historically more of a manufacturer's organization. within the industry and maybe the broader community too, probably what we're most well known for is putting on ICAST, the world's largest fish and tackle trade show. It's been held in Orlando for the last many years each summer, and hopefully will be for a while too. So ICAST is a really, really cool event that, you know, if you're part of the industry, sort of a must-see event where everything, all the latest new gadgets and products are released, and a lot of business takes place, and really cool thing. But between ICAST and then the other big thing we do that's less well known is government affairs. So I oversee our government affairs program. We've got six, I think, currently staff within government affairs. We've also got consultants and lobbyists running around different parts of the country, working on the less exciting, I guess it's maybe exciting depending on your perspective, but if you're into that sort of thing, the policy and regulations and legislation that ultimately impacts fishing access, conservation, trade and commerce for our industry, all the stuff that, you know, that if you just want to go fishing and have a good time, it's easy to take it for granted that there is a whole lot of regulation that goes on behind the scenes that ultimately provides those access opportunities and provides healthy and abundant fish populations. And, it's a lot to keep up with, and even with the staff that we've got, we feel stretched pretty thin to keep up with everything that's going on. But we'd like to think we're making some progress and helping to confront a lot of the issues our industry is up against. But many more to come.
Yeah, for sure. So maybe not the most exciting thing, but definitely important, because if we didn't have organizations like ASA, who knows what all would be going on behind our backs until, you know, it's put into place, and then we're kind of, our hands are tied at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's easy to sort of take it for granted that, like, you know, fishing's always been around. It's something, you know, my parents and their parents did, and it's, you know, this great all-American pastime. But, you know, the world's changing, and wildlife values are changing, and, you know, urbanization and development and issues impacting the environment. You know, there's a lot of stuff that ultimately could chip away. It's, you know, with fishing, I don't know that we've got like this huge anti-fishing, we need to ban it outright movement. I mean, I'm sure there's people, I know there's people out there that feel that way, but it doesn't seem to have a whole lot of broader political traction to just outright ban fishing, at least not in the U.S. right at this time. So it's more like the slippery slope of, you know, if we continue to over-regulate or over-restrict some of these fisheries, or in some cases not pay close enough attention to striking the right balance between sustainability and access, or if, you know, someone wants to get away with the whole system of conservation funding that helps do habitat restoration and fund hatcheries and build boat ramps. You need people tracking those things, staying on top of them, reminding lawmakers why this industry is so important. It's something when I tell like friends what I do, they're sort of surprised, like, really, fishing? There needs to be a lobbying arm behind that, but yeah. You know, if you think of the numbers behind it, 55 million people fish each year, 800,000 jobs that are supported in the U.S. by recreational fishing, $148 billion a year economic impact. I mean, it's a big industry that a lot of people, because it's so widely distributed among so many people, some spending more than others to go do it, that, you know, it's until you actually add the numbers up, it's sometimes easy to forget, like, yeah, this is a really powerful economic driver, and it's really important. It's not just something that, if it were to go away, that we wouldn't see some harm come from it. So, but you need people out there reminding lawmakers and regulators why this is important and why we need to strike a good balance of allowing access and allowing for conservation of our fisheries.
For sure. So for people listening right now, whether you're just a casual angler or maybe you like to get in the mix and do some like competitive fishing, some tournaments, saltwater, freshwater, whatever it may be, what are a few of the issues right now that you feel like people should be aware of?
Yeah, and I mean, I was telling somebody just a little bit ago that part of the challenge we deal with is there's just a lot going on. I mean, there's not this one regulation that impacts fishing all across the country. It's, you know, state by state, region by region, locality by locality, and fishery by fishery. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot happening right now. I'll say I've been at ASA for 15 years now, and the biggest regulatory issue that I've seen come across our industry over that time is happening right now. And while it might not sound like it impacts a large segment of the industry, it's, you know, the implications of this one are huge, and it actually deals with whales, of all things. There's an endangered whale along the Atlantic coast called the North Atlantic right whale that there's only about 350 of them left. I mean, it's something that it definitely deserves attention of how do we minimize the harm that's happening to this species and help it recover. But in a really poorly developed zero consultation attempt at minimizing vessel strikes for right whales, because every now and then one of them does get hit by a larger ship, typically like a massive cargo ship. The National Marine Fisheries Service put out this regulation that would essentially take the Atlantic coast from Maine down to central Florida, and for about half of the year, make it effectively impossible to go offshore if you're in a boat larger than 35 feet because of these really onerous speed restrictions that are put in place. You know, they keep telling us, well, no, these areas are still open, but if you can only go 10 knots, it's kind of hard to get 50 plus miles offshore sputtering along at that speed. So, and again, just the how poorly, you know, it's well-intentioned, I'm sure, but if you go in and look at how many flaws there were in the analysis and all these just wrong assumptions, poor data, that all led to this over estimate of risk posed by recreational vessels. It's this is, again, why you need groups paying attention to this stuff and tracking it and calling these agencies out when they do the wrong thing. And our message all along has been like, hey, we want to help. We care about the marine environment. We care about the ocean and all the creatures in it. You know, nobody in a recreational boat wants to be responsible for the death of an endangered whale, but surely there's a better way to go about this, especially within an industry that, you know, you've been ICAST, and I mean, you're well aware of all the technology that's out there in terms of marine electronics and, you know, forward facing sonar and all the new advances that, you know, it seems like we could be doing a lot more to identify these whales and avoid them. And, we just need, you know, NOAA Fisheries actually work with us towards that end. So, you know, we're working with a lot of other groups and a lot of other partners on that one. But it's a regulation we expect to maybe come out later this year. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like. But, again, the implications, if you think of all the charter boats, head boats along the Atlantic coast that for, again, half of the year can't go offshore, they're going to have to shut down, and just the massive impacts that would have for just a regulation that wasn't very well thought of. So, yeah, that's a really good example of where if you just sort of take it for granted and assume that, you know, nothing's really going to impact us and how bad could it really get, that, you know, you need groups like American Sport Fishing Association and others that are fighting for folks to make sure that conservation is done right and that access is still maintained as much as it can be.
For sure. And I think it's always important to remember, too, even if you're not located on that coast, you know, maybe you're in California or wherever else, it still impacts you in some way, right? You know, it just kind of overflows into the entire industry. So I think it's important for everybody who's passionate about it to support, even when it's something that might, you don't feel like directly geographically is going to affect you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, and even in this case, there was another endangered whale discovered in the Gulf of Mexico where a similar proposal came about over the past year. So, yeah, I mean, it's if the North Atlantic right whale issue doesn't impact you, there might be another whale or some other marine mammal, or even in freshwater, something else identified where, you know, this becomes the de facto government approach to addressing these things. And again, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, leave us alone, let us do whatever we want to do. Like, you know, we recognize we're stewards of the environment. We have a role, and there are wise, responsible regulations that can be needed. But, you know, let's work together. Let's partner. Let's figure out the best solution and how can we help get there, as opposed to just cram stuff in our throats without any sort of consultation. Right. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to sort of think through that, like, the angler, I don't know, I don't want to go so far as say apathy, but there's very much like, if it's not happening in my backyard, I don't care about it mentality, which I get, you know, to some extent. It's like, yeah, I mean, that's not my issue. It sounds far away. It sounds like something that's not going to impact me. But yeah, I think that's something as a community we've often struggled with, of like, how do we get 55 million anglers, or even a large chunk of them, to recognize that, you know, even if this specific issue isn't affecting me and my day-to-day fishing activities, you know, we're kind of all in this together. Mm-hmm. But it just feels like a lot of times as a community, we get too focused on the differences in, you know, fly anglers versus conventional, or you know, right. Should we be stocking fish or relying just on native fish, or, you know, the jigging techniques this person, you know, I mean, we can get very tribal, I guess, at times, and kind of be our own worst enemy, where, you know, we've got enough other challenges out there that are working against all of us that, you know, let's figure out how to recognize our similarities, and that as a community, we need to be working together and not not dividing, because it's a whole lot easier to pick us apart if we're squabbling amongst right. each other, as opposed to, you know, to recognizing the similarities, and that you know, these impacts to one segment of our community are eventually going to come around and impact us too. So we need to have each other's backs.
Right. So one interesting thing that you shared at the MPA conference I had not heard of before, you know, being that I have done some tournaments here, was that there are some other countries that are actually banning catch and release, which sounds completely backwards when you first hear about it. But that was kind of shocking to me.
Yeah. And again, you sort of think, you know, it could never happen here. You know, fishing's always been part of American culture. And like, I hope that's the case, and we'll fight like hell to make sure it is the case. But yeah, I mean, there's some examples around the world. Germany and Switzerland, both through different processes, have laws on the books that prohibit catch and release fishing. And this is all driven by, you know, an animal welfare kind of ethical position, which I, in my opinion, is pretty misguided. But the idea being that to just put a hook in a fish's mouth and release it back in the water is cruel. You know, I've sort of joked that, you know, if you were that fish, I bet you'd rather be let go than put in a cooler. So right. I'm not sure how killing it is a more humane way to go. But, yeah, so, I mean, and then just recently in Colombia, so, you know, different parts of the world, there was an Animal Welfare Act that passed that was interpreted to mean catch and release fishing was banned, because it's seen as unnecessary harm to fish. And you know, I've gotten really into hunting the last several years, paying a lot of attention to what's going on there for, you know, personal reasons, but also to see where there are analogies of what's happening in the hunting space and how it might come to fishing too. And you know, I think there's more of a out in the open anti-hunting movement that's taking place in different parts of the country. But yeah, I mean, it's really more of a death by a thousand cuts kind of thing of, you know, hey, we're going to ban this type of predator hunt, or this, you know, trapping, or, you know, you name it. We're not necessarily going to try and go out and ban white-tailed deer hunting, because we know that has too much popularity. But, you know, let's start chipping away at it and start getting rid of the things that the public's less likely to care about, because it impacts a smaller number of the hunting community, or it's a more charismatic species that they're hunting, and so therefore we can get more public sentiment. And, you know, I think we're a ways away from that happening on the fishing side. I hope we are. but, you know, it's potentially coming if we're not staying on top of these things, and especially showing, you know, all the positives of recreational fishing. If you think of the conservation benefits of all the money that our community puts back into supporting conservation, you know, all your fishing license purchases, those dollars are going back to support aquatic resource conservation and habitat restoration and healthy fisheries. And same with the excise tax. Every time you buy fishing equipment, there's an excise tax that also goes back to support all those things. So the conservation benefits of recreational fishing, all of the societal benefits of you know, time outdoors, time with family and friends, bonding, connecting, enjoying nature, the economics behind it, as we talked about earlier, how much of an economic impact. Again, I think it's easy for people to sort of take that for granted or think, you know, hey, if we ban this type of fishing or if we close that season, you know, people might be inconvenienced, but it's not that big of a deal. We need to collectively tell the benefits that recreational fishing provides so that it's not an easy decision and that these more concerning trends are less likely to happen because we've got it more ingrained in people's minds. Like, yeah, no, fishing's good. We want to make sure that continues going forward. We don't want to go the way of Germany or Switzerland or Colombia and end up in a place where something is widely viewed as a good thing. It's catch and release fishing is banned. It's terrifying to me that there's actually countries that have decided to go that direction. And to me, it's a warning that we can't take this for granted.
Yeah. Recently, you know, there was a series on FS1 on the kind of the growth and history of BASS and the tournaments. And I was getting up early Saturday mornings and catching those episodes as they came out. And in the beginning, it was interesting to me. You know, the catch and release wasn't really part of the deal. Everybody just caught their fish and brought them in. And then they kind of quickly realized, whoa, if this is catching on, you know, like it's starting to, we're going to ruin our fisheries pretty quickly if we're just catching, killing. And so it's just crazy to me to think that some people think it should go back to that.
Yeah, no, you think of what, you know, a game changer that was, not just for bass fishing, but I mean, have that mentality kind of ingrained in a lot of the fishing that goes on. Of like, if you want to fill up your cooler and it's sustainable and within regulations, great. But by and large, like, let's keep the fish in the water so that they can keep swimming and growing and reproducing and, you know, keep this all going. I mean, really, the industry would not be anywhere near where it is now if we didn't have catch and release adopted as widespread as it has been. I mean, that was a good thing. So it's something we need to be promoting and encouraging in a lot of other fisheries where, where that fits what anglers are looking for and fits within management goals. So that's where you get a whole different philosophical view to this stuff come into play. And it can really upend everything we thought we knew about fish and wildlife management. And it's kind of it's a scary thought.
Yeah. So, want to kind of start wrapping up just a little bit here, but I wanted to give a shout out to your website, asafishing.org. I'll put a link to that in the show notes for this episode, but I think it's a really well laid out website. It makes it easy for people to go navigate, find out, you know, take a look at what the current issues are, read up a little bit on them. There's a lot of issues, as you mentioned, so it's not just, you know, the right whale thing that's going on, but there's quite a few other major issues that you guys have your, you know, finger on the pulse of and are working towards coming up with good solutions. And so anybody listening to this, if they want to help, like, what are some of the best things that they can do, the most impactful things to help with some of these issues?
Yeah, well, thanks for mentioning our website. Yeah, I mean, that's an easy first step is go to asafishing.org. We've got a whole advocacy section, action center. We've got a program called Keep America Fishing where it's quick, easy, free to sign up. I promise we don't spam you with a bunch of ads or emails you don't want. It's really just a way when an issue pops up, whether it's a national bill that you need to contact your members of Congress and tell them to support or in some cases oppose, or if there's a regulatory meeting happening nearby that you need to either submit comments or maybe show up to. I mean, you know, like I said, we're working on a lot of stuff that kind of covers the gamut of conservation and access and trade issues. Anyway, it's a really simple, easy way to get involved and keep track of what's going on. So, yeah, I mean, that's a good start for folks that haven't done so already. You know, find what are your local fishing organizations that seem to know what they're doing, and engage in a positive, constructive way with advocacy. You know, get involved, be a part. You know, if you care about this activity, and probably if you're listening to this podcast, you do, and something you want to make sure is around for a long time. Like I said, please don't just take it for granted and leave it to others to make sure that this is passed on, that, you know, we really need as a community to step up. So, I mean, that's really my message, is get involved, you know, work with your local state fish and wildlife agency, volunteer, get to know the management process and who's actually managing our fisheries, and how you can provide input on better ways to go about things, because you know, those voices are needed and valuable. And it's one of those kind of snowball effects of the more you get involved and see the impact that you can have, you know, the more you'll want to and learn more and see more opportunities to engage. So yeah, I mean, really just look for any of those opportunities. But first step, yeah, if you just want to know what's going on out there, we've got a lot of bills that we're working on in Congress that doesn't really matter where you are or what your fisheries are, at least some of them are going to touch on things you care about. And so, yeah, we try and list all that out on our website, asafishing.org.
Awesome. Yeah, so I'm subscribed to the Keep America Fishing emails. We don't get spammed, so yeah.
Thanks for verifying.
Safe there. Yeah, you're good. Well, thank you, Mike, for taking some time out of your day to come on the podcast and just kind of spread awareness to our listeners. And I am looking forward to coming back to ICAST again this summer. So always fun to get back down to Florida and you know, get to see all the new stuff that's coming out and get excited. So... really?
Yeah, for us, it's a year-round, all for 1 week, it's a year-round thing. So we've got staff that up to the eyeballs in right now. But sure. Just a few more months.
Yep, it'll be here before you know it. Yep. Well, very cool. Well, thanks again. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And be sure and go to asafishing.org, check it out, and we'll see y'all next week.